All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. I don't know where Dan's at, but I'm here. Mina Kimes, L. Duncan. Let's roll.
Is it fair to say that James Harden choked last night, even though the Rockets won?
Did we just do this? Did we really just do this, right? Were you so hyped up to talk about James Harden choking? Because we were all hyped up to talk about James Harden choking. He was not shooting well in this game at all. We were ready to say he choked. And then James Harden went off and did something that we swear he never does. Played some defense. Can we get a look at this? Because this really is a great play. And this is a play that, you know, basically saved their season. Here's James Harden. Then gets out the way, and then does that. Have you ever, do you recall ever seeing that level of emotion from James Harden on the floor?
No.
Ever? Yo!
Yeah.
Yo! So, he did, I don't want to say he choked. I just think that after playing seven games in a series, shooting 30-footers all day long is a little bit difficult for you to pull off. I'm not going to do that to him there. I am going to give him credit for making not just a great play, but a great play that we all never would think that he would be the guy to play. Stop hate.
See, but that's the thing, though, Bo, is that I think, like, if anything, if there's a bright spot for James Harden, maybe people will understand finally that James Harden's defense has really exponentially gotten better and better. In fact, the numbers will tell you he's the second best post defender in the entire NBA. He's got 60 blocks in the regular season, which is tied for a career high, even though he didn't play in as many games. So he is a very competent defensive player. For me, it's not about the shots not falling, because that happens, especially when you're a volume shooter, right? It's about the fact that in these big moments, he doesn't even try to shoot the ball. I think he had 15 field goal attempts. There was only a handful of games all season where he attempted fewer than 16 shots. It's as if he's hesitant and doesn't want to be the one in these elimination games to really step up. We saw it in 2015 against the Warriors. We saw it in 2017 against the Kawhi-less Spurs. It just feels like when you know Russell Westbrook is still hampered with injury and working his way back, they've got to be able to put it on you. And I don't know if it's because of the seven-game series, the predictability of what James Harden does. He does it at an elite level, but you guys know what it is. He's either going to step back or he's going to drive. And I think we shouldn't take away from what Lu Dort did defensively over the last five seasons. He's basically been the most competent defender, but I won't say he choke. I just wonder why he doesn't want to be the guy.
Kind of feels like you just called him a choker, like in a very long, roundabout, gentle way. Look, if you had told me back in January that the Rockets would win a game seven with Harden going 1-for-9 from three, okay, with someone named Lu Dort, whose existence I was not aware of back then, outscoring everyone, and then James making that outstanding defensive play for which he surely deserves credit at the end of the game, I would have said, I'll have what you're having, and then added, wait, they're playing basketball in August? It's kind of weird. Rockets fans must feel so lucky today, because if Dort makes that shot, the weaponization of memes would have kept them off of the internet for 10 years. So they are relieved, but I can't imagine they're terribly hopeful for the next round after what we've seen from Harden in the playoffs so far.
Well, there's also a fair question to ask, because I think that D'Antoni pulled off a pretty cool magic trick by making the small ball thing go the way it has, and it continues. If they had lost that game, D'Antoni absolutely would have gotten fired. If they lose that game at some point, I think we get back to asking ourselves whether Daryl Morey was going to have a job, because I did not think at the beginning of this season that he would have a job at the end of the season. I also think it is possible that the Rockets might be better off if they did start making those changes. But they're probably not going to, and it came down to James Harden blocking that shot.
You guys, why don't you put the blame where it belongs, at the feet of referee Scott Foster? Hear me out. Chris Paul has onto something, because Chris Paul teams are 2-13, okay, in the postseason, in games where he is a referee. He hates them, and he's to blame.
But he hates Houston, too. Like, the two hatred rays coming out of hatred rays. Scott Foster cancels out Scott Faster in this case.
Did you call him Scott Faster?
After I said hatred rays, I kind of lost the script.
Do you have faith that Steve Nash is the right coach for KD and Kyrie?
Yeah, I woke up this morning. Steve Nash was the coach of the Nets. I didn't know that this was the thing that we were thinking about. And one thing I have to acknowledge myself about the NBA, I can't speak for the rest of you soothsayers. I have no idea who is or is not going to be a good head coach. I have no idea how much experience as an assistant matters. I don't know how much experience as a college coach matters. I have no clue. Maybe this works. Maybe it doesn't. But I know that Steve Nash is a point guard, and his brand of point guard is the opposite of the Kyrie Irving brand of point guard. And I have no reason to believe that Kyrie Irving is going to want to listen to anything he has to say. And that's before we deal with adding Kevin Durant into the mix and those other low spades that the Nets have, who are pretty good players who seem to play better without Kyrie. I say all that to say, when is Steve Nash going to quit this job? Like, everything I hear about this seems to add up to a dude that's already got $1 zillion in his pocket. Why in the world am I here putting up with Kyrie?
Kyrie, who I don't think has ever held the ball for less than 7 seconds. Like, how is this going to work? The best, I guess, the most cogent explanation for why it would work is that they clearly picked him, Bo, right? Like, back in March, when the Nets fired Kenny Atkinson, we all had to pretend like it wasn't KD and Kyrie pulling the trigger when that was obviously the case. Now we've got Steve Nash, who we know worked with Kevin Durant, Golden State, they're close. So clearly this is coming from the stars. I'm with you. I don't know if he's going to be a good head coach. The record for former stars making that leap and making it very quickly is mixed. But I do know KD and Kyrie are at least going to try to make this work, because this was clearly their choice.
This is such a Nets move. I mean, the last time we had a Hall of Fame player with zero experience just jump to the head coaching position, it was Jason Kidd, hired by the Nets. Certainly the Nets hope that that relationship with Steve Nash is going to go a little bit better than it did with Jason Kidd, who was a one and done and ended a messy divorce. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be all about managing personalities, right? And I get it. Like, Kevin Durant wanted his dude in there. Sean Marks played with Steve Nash, so they're homies. I just feel like you're going to hear a lot today about Jacques Vaughn, and you're already seeing a lot of sort of visceral reaction to the idea that there's already a dearth of Black head coaching positions in the NBA. We've already seen a couple fired this offseason. And to think that you would pass up on a very capable and competent candidate for head coach, someone that's already in the building, for a white basketball player with absolutely no experience. But I think outside of that, like, if you can't get a job based on what Jacques Vaughn did this year, then what are you supposed to do? And it feels like maybe the Nets threw this sort of net out to try to get Steve Nash, not knowing if he'd take it, because he's been very reticent to take a head coaching job since he retired. And we're maybe surprised that he was like, all right, bump it, I'll come. But it just feels like, you know, this is a worst case scenario for Jacques Vaughn, and it just feels unfair, frankly.
Yeah, it might be unfair, but if I'm Jacques Vaughn, I don't think I want to be coaching the Nets myself, right? One thing about Jacques Vaughn is he's a grinder type, right? Did the most with the little that he had. That also applies to Steve Nash, though, and those grinder types and prodigies. It typically doesn't work out very well when you put the two of them together. And that's why I look at Nash and I'm just like, I think he's going to quit. Like, I don't know what day it's going to be, but we're going to be making Magic Johnson memes out of him.
Does signing Leonard Fournette raise your expectations for the Bucks?
All right, Leonard Fournette, first round draft pick, 2017, really great college player, out on the curb very recently. Tampa Bay went ahead and picked him up. It doesn't really raise my expectations for them, because the issue with Fournette is, if he's in the game, you know they're going to run the ball, right? Like, he is a living, breathing tell every time that he is out there. But he is good at actually running the ball. He's doing that a couple hundred yards in a game this season. Like, it's not like he's a bad player. Maybe not worth the money that he would be looking for, that he got as a first-round pick. But having him is not a bad thing. What they do with him, that remains to be seen.
Well, I think what they're going to do with him is they're going to try to make him catch more passes. He's coming off a career-high 76 catches, right, which is a career-high for him. And Tom Brady, since he's turned 40 years old, has really used his running backs as binkies. In fact, I think he has something like 364 passes to running backs since 2017. But this, to me, is just such peak Tom Brady. Like, how many times has he taken a running back who's on life support and given them life? Like, ask Corey Dillon what he's capable of doing, or LeGarrette Blount. No, I don't think that they're going to necessarily be better because of this move, but I certainly don't think it helps a Bucks team who has been desperate for any consistency at running back since 2015.
Since I am often mischaracterized on this program as a running back hater, I thought I would say something nice about Leonard Fournette, which is he is not as bad as he has been represented. In Jacksonville, yes, his production was not great, but he was running into stacked boxes behind a terrible offensive line. Last season, he ranked 35th in yards before contact per carry and sixth in yards after contact, which reflects how bad that offensive line is. Now, I don't think he's going to make a massive difference in Tampa, but I think it's a great destination for him simply because he gets to be part of a good offense and run into lighter boxes. Happy for Leonard. That sounded a lot nicer. That whole spiel sounded more complimentary in my head.
It felt strained.
I thought, knowing you and how you are about these things, I think you did pretty well in basically pointing out your underlying point, which is it's the line that matters more than the running back. I feel like that's what you really said there, but, you know, it was still fairly nice to Leonard.
Sure. Yeah.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie show.
You know, it's funny. I was texting with Israel Gutierrez on my birthday, and something dawned on me while I was talking to him that I had not considered, that maybe, just maybe, my Instagram post for my 40th birthday would be something I would never be able to live down on television, because you guys would maybe jump upon this.
Do you question if the refs completely ruined the Heat's big win over the Bucks?
All right, guys, perfect can be the enemy of good. This is how we got to the end in Heat Bucks. The Bucks are down 2-0, by the way. That's probably pretty bad. Can we get this first one up here, Goran Dragic? Hilton launches
a three. It's called for the foul here on Middleton.
Now, he looked pretty vertical, right? Looks pretty vertical.
Yes, that's not a foul.
Looks like Middleton's jumping into him. They called that one a foul. Now, let's get to this next one. Let's go ahead and pull this up. Here we go. Jimmy Butler. Puts this up, doesn't make the shot. We're going to overtime, except we're not going to overtime. They called a foul on Giannis right there. Jimmy goes to the free throw line, makes them, end of the game. I hate this. I hate every single thing about this. I hate everything about the idea that you're going to have a play like that, because the reality is they're going to be able to find a foul no matter what under circumstances like those. Nothing looked egregious. They should have taken that game to overtime.
Yeah, they've been calling these jumpers disproportionately in the bubble, and I hate it. This was actually worse, by the way, than what happened in the Thunder Rockets game. It just wasn't Scott Foster, so we don't know who to yell at because he's the only name people know. It's also a situation in which, you know, for the most part, I've been okay with the digital fans, but we needed some real fans there. We needed some real fans just screaming profanity and losing their minds because the digital fans didn't cut it in that moment.
Yeah, it's almost like the refs remembered that. They were like, by the way, there is no one to boo us. Like, let's get wild. But you guys, listen, they were egregious. They were terrible. But the Bucks lost that game on our down 2-0 because they're getting beat by a Miami team with four guys that are on rookie contracts, two of whom were undrafted, and they have no one to finish these games. I'm listening to Doris Burke say, like, okay, if you're the Bucks, like, who's getting the final shot here? Kyle Korver or George Hill? That's a problem. Like, that is an absolute problem. Giannis played, 32, 33 minutes when we've seen these superstars have to sort of step up and play 40. There's a huge problem with the Bucks. The idea that Miami has a closer, the idea that Miami didn't need their closer yesterday to beat the Bucks is a real issue. Giannis just, I understand for a guy that almost had 30 on the box score, it seems ridiculous to say, but he just didn't seem like he was in that game yesterday. It just didn't seem like he was a factor. And if he's not a factor, the Bucks are going nowhere.
Well, what happens when you build your whole offense around a guy that can't shoot? Right. And that's not even to take a shot at Giannis. His game is something different. There was a time where we did not expect 7-footers necessarily to be able to shoot. We didn't require that.
Right.
Your best player who dominates your offense is a dude that can't shoot. And in this game, he played pretty well, because what Miami has is two guys strong enough to guard him. To me, it's not about being long enough to guard him. It's not about being quick enough to guard him. It's about being strong enough. And Adebayo and Jimmy both are able to do that. I do not think this series ends well for Milwaukee.
I'm just so glad Dan's not here today, because the thing that struck me yesterday is I know way too many Heat fans, and they are getting way too chesty. Okay,
yeah, they are.
But they've been telling you that this is how this was going to go if they played in the playoffs, and here we are, and this is how it's going. Cortez going to be insufferable.
Do you question if this is a thirst trap?
You know, it's funny. I was texting with Israel Gutierrez on my birthday, and something dawned on me while I was talking to him that I had not considered, that maybe, just maybe, my Instagram post for my 40th birthday would be something I would never be able to live down on television, because you guys would maybe jump upon this. So let's go. I turned 40 last Wednesday. Happy birthday to me. Let's get a
happy
look
birthday,
at
Bo.
Me.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Oh, y'all went straight to it. Y'all went straight to it. I thought we were going to go to the first one with the polo shirt on. Yeah, there I go. I was just sitting by the pool at my homeboy's house. My brother took a picture. There we go.
It feels like, Bo, the first one, the first picture of you with your headshot that looked like something you take for the back of a book jacket, I feel like was a flex of how much hair you have. And then you were like, let me just remind everyone that I also have body. And I was just waiting for like the terrible hashtag, like birthday behavior, whatever everyone always does on Facebook. But this was an absolute thirst trap, 100% thirst trap.
A thirst trap that you tried to downplay, Bo, but I follow you on Instagram by making it the second photo, right? Because if it was the correct first photo, it would have been too shameless. But y'all here, you're like, okay, here's the classy photo. And I'm just going to throw this one in for the followers, you know? And by the way, speaking of those followers, half of the comments were just dudes saying, unblock me, Bo. So that's the sort of thirst you are eliciting.
That's what I'm saying. If it was a thirst trap, who got trapped? Because I did not. There were not people laying in the mentions who had gotten trapped up. Y'all must have talked about that amongst yourselves. And if I was going to be thirst trapping, there's a different picture I could have put up, but I kept it to myself.
Ooh, do tell.
I just sent this to y'all. This is what I would send if I was trapped. Oh, don't you dare send it to the producers. Oh,
no. Okay, but tape our reactions, even though.
Wait, I don't have it yet. Wait, do I have it? Okay, I do.
That would be sad. Although
you realize
y'all laughing at me, perhaps it would not work.
Everyone watching this segment is gonna think it's way more salacious than what it is. So.
Bo, did you know that person was taking that picture, or did you like pretend to look away and laugh?
100%.
Right, or was it like they sent it to you later, and then you put on the black and white filter? Like, how did that whole thing go down?
I did not know that that picture was being taken. Like the other one, that's like a for real thirst trap. I knew that that one was being taken. I did not know that picture being taken. And the thing about it is my brother took it because my brother is like a photographer type. That's what he's into. He likes to take pictures. And so he sent it to me. I was like, oh, okay, this is neat. The next thing I know, he's telling me how I need to post it and like leaning in on the idea that I needed to put this on the internet.
Oh, he had
when
you
I put
up.
His pictures up on the internet, he gets more followers. And I'm looking at him like, oh, you just setting your brother out here like this, right? Yep. Like that's what you're doing right now. You just setting little bro out. That was his whole plan. He wasn't thinking nothing about me.
Go, that's Bo. So anybody slide into the DMs after that, Bo, or what? Oh,
of course not.
In Cleveland, the Cavaliers' new uniforms.
All right, the Cavs. They do this from time to time when they get sorry. They're just like, yo, we're going to break out new uniforms. Maybe we won't be sorry anymore. Now, they're telling me that these uniforms might involve a shot at somebody. Can we get a look?
The go.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Lord. Why bring Michael Jordan into this?
When I hear the name MJ Michael Jordan, my first thought is the go.
Wow. Well,
might be a shot.
The last dance, last shot. Which you always wanted to be like Michael Jordan growing up.
Michael Jordan.
There is a different amount of respect.
The Jordan brand.
He's got a Puma. He's got a Puma hoodie on though.
When you see Jumpman, you know what that represents.
Yo, you know what this video is a reminder of? That Dan Gilbert is not from Cleveland. I don't feel like there's any Cleveland Cavaliers fan, even if they hate LeBron to the end of time, that wants a testimonial to Michael Jordan to talk about the uniform. Mina, you intrigued?
Well, unfortunately, I could only find my C sign, but I am not intrigued, actually. You're absolutely right. Who is this for? There's not a single Cavs fan in the world who wants their own team arguing that Michael Jordan is the GOAT right out the gate. Like, I don't understand the purpose. And this was clearly produced internally, by the way. It wasn't like a Jordan brand thing, so I don't get it at all.
Elle, you intrigued?
I think the video was a stark reminder of who's actually on the Cavs because I forgot. And then I was like, oh, yeah, Larry Nance Jr. and Colin Sexton. And then the third guy that wears number 22. No, because I don't care about teams that are the 12th seed in their conference.
Yo. The third guy who wears 22, who I'm pretty sure is Larry Nance Jr.
No, the other one, the third one that they showed. Who was the third guy wearing the Puma sweatshirt? Who's that?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, I figured one of them was Colin Sexton, but I wasn't sure.
The second one was Colin Sexton. The first one was Larry Nance Jr.
With all the hair?
Who was the third? Who is it? Who?
Oh, our producers?
Kevin Porter Jr. Okay, I repeat. Who?
Yeah, like, let me tell you something, Kevin Porter. Ain't no need for the junior, buddy. We just getting to know you. All right, now that you guys are done laughing at me and done laughing at the Cavs, I hope you enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I don't know what's coming on after this show, though.
Speaking of the Cavs, you're going to be posting more photos. We're going to get some shots this time.
So. What do your Cavs look like, Bo? Because I'm going to say they're skinny. Are they skinny?
And defined.